Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Well, at this time, as promised, we're going to hear about the Nano Hub. Now, before we get into this, I got to tell you, I know absolutely nothing about this. So I'm going to ask every dumb question in the world. But we're lucky today we have as our guest Gerhard Klimek. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering, and he's director of the Network for Computational Nanotechnology at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana, and we've reached him at his office there. Welcome to the program, Gerhard.
Yeah, hello.
So good to have you. Now tell us, you know, Nano Hub, okay? I got tipped off about Nano Hub by Jim Morris at the IEEE 11th International Conference on Nanotechnology, where I understand you're going to be making your presentation. And I don't have any idea at all what this is about. But obviously, you've got plenty of credentials. So fill us in. What is Nano Hub?
All right. So imagine you have a whole bunch of research going on in a community, maybe by people that really understand nanotechnology and modeling and simulation, and they want to share it with the community, and they want to make it useful. So how do you do that? So every professor has a website, right? They put their stuff up, and or they publish their papers, but that's sort of a dispersed way of disseminating information. Mm-hmm. But what if you want to reach a broader audience, and what if you want to focus the effort? And that's sort of what NanoHub is about. It's a community website called nanohub.org. So it's an organization in a sense. And please note that there's a lack of nanohub.purdue.edu. It's really not meant as a Purdue website, but it's a community website. And what's happening there is people can upload and share content, recent content on research and educational material. And the flagship service is really that we run inside a web browser advanced and also simple simulation tools, and they kind of look like a little applet that runs in your browser, but really it's powered by powerful computers in some back end, and you can use the most advanced simulation engines in nanotechnology in your browser without installing anything. So that's sort of a flagship service, and we have about 10,000 users a year that run simulations like that. And they use it for research, and they use it for education. And the other aspect we offer is seminars and tutorials and lectures and even whole classes that teach people, users about nanotechnology. And those are sort of voiced over PowerPoint or video lectures, and we have about 165,000 users annually that come to the site. And this is really in 172 countries, so really all over the world, and we have sort of cool animations where we can see that this site is alive. It's alive and doing well all over the world, and basically wherever there's light on at night, you might have seen these NASA images. There's also NanoHub users in civilized nations. So it's a kind of a cool thing to really disseminate knowledge across the globe and share information and make it useful.
So now, this is a service, and let's say that I'm a student somewhere, or let's say I'm a teacher somewhere. I can actually pull this up in the classroom and work simulated experiments or something like that with nanotechnology and teach the students from a very elementary age, let's say, the basics of nanotechnology all the way up to more sophisticated things. Is that what you're telling me?
That's exactly what the goal is. So it's really meant to be useful. So say you're a teacher, you want to teach nanotechnology concepts, say typically college and up, or maybe some advanced high school physics, you go to nanohub.org, and right in the middle there is a link called Teach and Learn, and that's how we suggest to teachers how they can start on using the site for teaching and learning. And what we have are what we call tool-powered curricula. It's really a novel way of teaching material where there is simulation tools integrated with teaching material. Run simulations, say you can view a crystal, you can view a buckyball, you can view a carbon nanotube, and you can rotate it around, you can zoom in. It's almost like you can grab those, at least visually, with your eyes. And then students' concepts about these, there's exercises and tutorials that go along. Most of the tools have first-time user guides that sort of walk people through the usage of these tools. And that's one way of really innovating education on nanotechnology. And the really cool thing is that this is stuff that is really new. I mean, it's not been in textbooks for the last 20 years, and eventually they show up on a web page. Many of these materials are really PhD thesis works from 2-3 years ago, or maybe even last year, and we can migrate them into the classroom of today and do this rather rapidly.
Well, now this is a lot of work. I mean, who keeps this website current? Who checks it for accuracy?
Those are very good questions. Thank you. So the Network for Computational Nanotechnology is funded by the U.S. National Science Foundation.
Oh, really?
This is currently a 10-year program that's been started in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was really to create an infrastructure that sometimes I'll call it cyber infrastructure that enables people to collaborate, to share, and to learn in a new area, and the new area is nanotechnology. It's a big effort. It involves 7 universities, 7 institutions. So Purdue is the sort of the head node, and then we have Northwestern, University of Illinois. We have Berkeley. We have the Molecular Foundry at the Berkeley lab. Have MIT, and we have University of Texas, El Paso and Norfolk State. So these are the institutions that are, in a sense, the primary content providers and also the primary testing facilities, so to speak. I mean, think of it as a harvesting of information. So Purdue has built this infrastructure, and what we're trying to do is engage faculty members that worked hard for many years to create research results and research insights, and we try to help them convert them into something that you can host for literally hundreds of thousands of people. So we're not really funding the research per se, because nanotechnology is already a very big area. It's kind of hard to want to do it all. But what we provide is sort of an outlet or a ground where people can actually disseminate their material and make it useful for others. And the strength is we provide these authors, we treat like these contributions like a publication in a sense. We provide these authors with statistics on how many people use them and what frequency, and if you have a tool, we can sort of figure out by behavior of users if they use it in a classroom. So we give material back to these authors, and then they can use it in their proposals to say, look, I'm generating knowledge and I'm disseminating it, and so many people are using it. Indeed, I'm interested in disseminating knowledge. So it helps the authors as well, and it helps the community. So the effort is in a sense big, but the funding we get in a sense proportional to how many people we reach is actually relatively low compared to the original research efforts.
Well, I have a question for you here, and kind of clear this up just a little bit. What about a controversy? I mean, an author that's, let's say, can't get published in one of the leading scientific journals can get published on nanohub.org, but what if his stuff is controversial? Like, for instance, we talked to Michael Kelly from Oxford. He is contending that nanoparticles below 3 nanometers cannot be used to manufacture because of the tolerance differences. And of course, that's controversial. A lot of people really disagree with him. But would he be allowed to put his stuff up at nanohub.org?
So in principle, we are open to contributions to the community by everyone. We are not duplicating a peer review process that typically exists in any of these journals. And the content we provide is slightly different. But if somebody has a seminar, they really want to make their case, and as long as it's not offensive language, I think it's a great way to disseminate your point of view. And then we have rankings and questions and answer forum and feedbacks that users can provide. So we have this sort of Web 2.0 technology built into the website. And I'm not saying that replaces the peer review, but it certainly gives another feedback mechanism for authors. And in general, I would say we haven't had any real controversial issues sort of being posted on NanoHub. And certainly for the tools we have, we pretty much know who the authors are, and we demand that there is a sort of a peer-reviewed journal article that sort of describes what the basis of the tool is that goes along. But we're not duplicating the peer review process as such. But we encourage discussions and want to foster these interactions between the community.
Well, what about copyrights and proprietary information and that sort of thing? Is there ever any issues about that with being published at Nano?
So there's two issues, really, right? There's one that deals with software. And there's one that deals with, say, seminars, tutorials. So let me touch base first on the software.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So the software we host and the tools we host, the normal user that might use it in a classroom or the experimentalist that wants to use it, what they experience is sort of like an applet, right? Whatever you have on your iPad or iPhone or whatever electronic device, it's an app. In fact, one of the apps called as a nano app store.
Uh-huh.
So they experience an end-to-end usability, mm-hmm, scenario.
Okay.
And the authors of this tool have allowed us to host this app on NanoHub and to host it to users. So, but they retain all the IP to that tool, but the IP that is generated with that tool is owned by the user that generated it. So it's an app store in a sense. And some of these applications, maybe about 10% or so, the authors declared it as an open source.
All
that
right.
Means next to the tool, the launch button, like fire up this app, there's also a download button where you can download the source code onto your computer, and if you're a geek and really want to compile it and look at the source code and maybe modify it or learn about it, then you can do so as well. So there's really two components to that. One is the access to the executable, to the thing that does the computing in an end-to-end fashion, and then the second one is access to the source that really generated the executable.
Be a quick explanation of nanohub.org has turned into something much more interesting, and I know you have a lot more to say, but we're out of time, so we're going to have to continue this in next week's program. Thank you for being with us.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there.